Well, good morning, everyone. It's really cool to see the whole group of ACC students sitting back in the back corner over there. Not the whole group, most of them, to have you guys with us today. So if you're interested at all, not only did they build the ramp a couple of weeks ago, which was an interesting day because they were supposed to start at 9, but we had storms roll through, so everybody was like in this huge holding pattern and all of that. We had Linda Moore's funeral that day, so the storms and the delay took most of my family out, except David, who was able to go over for a little while. But those of you that missed the opportunity to help them with the ramp, you have an opportunity today to connect and engage with them. After church, we're going to have lunch, and then we're going to play water kickball. So all of you are invited to stay and play water kickball. Any takers? I figured probably not. Hey, water kickball, you get to actually slip and slide and all that. And so for some of you that slip and slide on a regular basis, you now have an excuse and a reason. No, still no takers. It's the best we can do. So it's good to have you guys with us and all that. So how many of you have ever heard the phrase, setting someone's feet to the fire? Okay, this phrase is one that references an actual ancient form of torture where they literally put someone's feet to the fire to get them to do things. In the early 1900s, it began to be used more figuratively for someone who found themselves in a tough spot or in a situation where maybe they were being coerced or something like that. How about the phrase, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen? This phrase is attributed to Harry Truman. It's reported that he used it, as some variation of it, as a senator. But when he was president, his cabinet members came to him and started complaining about the criticisms they were receiving in their appointments. And he told them that as their supervisor, as the person over them, he would stand by them. But there was also a reality they faced in the decisions that they made about if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. How about the phrase on the hot seat? Yeah, typically now it seems like the most popular usage of the phrase on the hot seat is in the NFL when coaches are being examined and explored as to whether they're going to keep their jobs or not. And so if a coach is on the hot seat, he's fighting for his job. This phrase dates back to the 1930s, and it has a couple of interesting different options for the origin of the idiom. One says back to the 1930s, and it references the electric chair. And so when someone was being put to death by the electric chair, they were told they were being put on the hot seat. The other one, interestingly enough, which kind of goes to the complete opposite of being put to death in the electric chair, it's attributed to Harpo Marx. When he was listed as a guest on a show, but he was the last guest on the list, and if something happened, he was going to be bumped from the guest list, and so he said he was the one on the hot seat. So those are some phrases about that. How many have ever experienced situations where they felt like the heat was on? Like the fire was being turned up a little bit and the heat was on in your life? We had a little bit of that in our family this week. We had one trip to the emergency room with our daughter who got home from some friend's house. Denise went and picked her up. Denise called and said, "Hey, I'm in the driveway and I need your help. Danielle is sobbing and in pain. Her legs hurt and she can't move them. She can't walk. She can't get out of the car and all that." So we wound up and made a trip to the ER, and 5.5 hours later, we're told we don't know. And so we went to our family doctor and are told we don't know. And so we're still kind of navigating that and looking for options. She's getting better incrementally, but still experiencing some goofy stuff with her legs and her feet and the way that they feel. And so you can pray for that as we try to navigate that hot seat. Two nights later, 2 o'clock in the morning, our son comes in our bedroom completely inconsolable because he'd come home from camp sick, came home from camp with a 103 degree temperature, and it had morphed into this incredibly painful ear infection that it was almost unbearable for him. And so two nights after one trip to the ER, we were laying there. I was laying there. Denise got up because I didn't get up, because had I gotten up, it was going to get real ugly real fast. And I just decided not to do that. But anyway, so we're laying there. I'm laying there wondering, are we going to make a second trip to the ER in 3 days for two kids? So yeah, kind of a little bit of an interesting week for us. Situations where you feel like the heat is on. How do you respond in those situations? Because those situations, like many of the other situations we face, are a series of decisions. You are put in a situation where you have to make a decision. When the heat is on, sometimes you are tempted to make a decision that compromises your convictions simply because the heat is on. Other times, you're tempted to stand firm to your convictions because the heat is on, and you refuse to allow the heat and the pressure of the moment to sway you from what you believe at the core of who you are. That's the situation that was found thousands of years ago with three guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. If you grew up in church, you probably have heard their story. If you didn't grow up in church, you probably have heard their story, even though you may not have known this is where the story came from. If you've heard the story about three guys who were thrown into a fiery furnace years ago, you have heard the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It takes place when the nation of Israel has been conquered by Babylon, and King Nebuchadnezzar had taken and made Israel captive in Babylon. It's a period of Israel's history that's known as the Babylonian exile. And so the Babylonian exile, the king Nebuchadnezzar wanted to take the best and the brightest of the young Jewish men and put them into the service to benefit his kingdom. King Nebuchadnezzar reigned over Babylon, and the period of the Babylonian exile for the nation of Israel was about 70 years. So over 70 years, they picked the best and the brightest of the Jewish young men to come into the service of the king in the royal palace. These three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, along with another guy by the name of Daniel rises to the top and become the cream of the crop. And they're put in charge of things in the palace. They're put in charge in things over Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego basically get put over the entire province of Babylon. The king consults them and Daniel on all matters that require wisdom and sound judgment. He is so impressed with the four of them that they become central in the foreign king's administration. Now, somewhere along the way, Nebuchadnezzar gets this grand idea to build a statue. It's going to be 90 feet tall, and it's going to be 9 feet wide, and it's going to be made of solid gold. And it is a statue of him. He's having a statue of himself built because he wants to make sure that none of the people in his kingdom forget what he looks like. That's not really the reason that he did this. Actually, the reason he did this is because kings in those days would take on almost a godlike status, almost a godlike presence. And so it would not be uncommon for a king like Nebuchadnezzar to expect or demand worship from the people. They expected them to be worshipped as a god. And so Nebuchadnezzar builds this statue, 90 feet tall, 9 feet wide, solid gold, as a representative of himself for people to worship. And here's what it says about the law that he puts in place around the building of the statue. It says, "Then a herald shouted, 'People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. So, statues built, laws in place, and now everyone faces a decision. Everyone faces a decision. When they hear the musical instruments, they face a decision as to whether they will bow down to the statue. For people like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, for people like Daniel, it now put them in a position of whether to bow down to the statue and obey the decree and the edict of the king, or to hold to their convictions, hold to what they believe, hold to their relationship with their God. And their God had said, have no other gods before me. Do not worship any foreign idols. Do not worship any graven images. No statues of kings would be a good definition of that. And so they're faced with this decision. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego make the decision to stay true to their convictions. They refuse to bow down to the king's statue. And just like in the decisions that we make, we always have people watching us, right? Just like the decisions we make, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have people watching them. And some of the people who are watching their decision-making process are people who are opposed to them. People who resent them for rising up in the king's administration when it should have been them. People who have taken roles that they thought they should have had. People who are now under the leadership of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they should be the ones in leadership. These foreign Jews should never be put in these positions over us. We should be there. And so as you can imagine, these people hated Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, resented Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so when the law is passed and the statue is built and the musical instruments play and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego don't bow down to the king's statue, guess what these people do? They run in tattletale. Because that's what we do, right? They run in tattletale against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then word gets to the king, and King Nebuchadnezzar is furious. He is so furious that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to bow down to the statue that he set in place so that people would worship him. He's so furious that he calls them in, and he bombards them with a list of questions. He says, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods? Now, the interesting thing there, there's another component to what he's asking there, to serve my gods, or to worship the gold statue I have set up, the statue of himself as a godlike figure. I will give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I have made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. Now, but if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately. He'd already said immediately once. Anyone who refuses to bow down will immediately be. That was the law. That was the edict. But for some reason, the king calls them in and gives them one more chance. And if they don't take hold of this one more chance, they will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace. And then here's the question. And then what God will be able to rescue you from my power? Says, what God will be able to rescue you? So the king is so impressed with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that he doesn't throw them immediately into the fiery furnace, which is what he said he would do. He brings them in for one more chance. He gives them one more chance. He says, you're going to hear the music again. And when you hear the music again, if you bow down, and I don't really care if you bow down, if you just pretend to kneel down and tie your shoes, it'll all be okay, because at least you'll give the appearance that you're doing. And sometimes that's what we do, just give the appearance, right? So he says, if you take this one more chance, but then if you don't do this, you'll immediately be thrown in the power of the presence. Because the God that you're choosing to serve, if you get thrown into that fiery furnace, the God that you're choosing to serve is no match for the power of the king. Your God is no match for my gods, and your God is no match for me. Does your God have a 90 foot by 9 feet tall statue made of pure gold that when the music, everybody bows down? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say no. No, my God doesn't have a 90 foot by 9 foot tall statue built of solid gold that when the music plays, we bow down and worship. Our God is within us. And our God, we refuse to bow down to your gods as well. Actually, here's what they say. They say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar. I love it. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar. I wonder what it was like. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar. Seriously, dude, you don't have this figured out by now. He says, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. Now, here's the deal. Nebuchadnezzar is known historically as the most ruthless and brutal king of Babylon's history. And though in the years that he reigned, he is the one who got Babylon to its greatest level of accomplishment, success, and notoriety. But he did it through very brutal and ruthless means. So I would think if there's anybody that you need to defend yourself in front of when the heat is on, when your feet are being set to the fire, when the kitchen is warm, I would think if there's anybody that you need to defend yourself, it is the ruthless, brutal king who holds your fate in his hands. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If, because they're still not convinced they're going to be, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. But even if he doesn't, they've already said they believe he's able. Our God is able to rescue us from your mighty power. But there's a chance that he doesn't. And even if he doesn't, even think that you have godlike status, and you may expect worship from subjects like us, and you may even demand it through the decree of a law, but the God that we serve will rescue us from your mighty power. And even if we're thrown in a fiery furnace, which you know what your fate is if you're thrown in a fiery furnace, right? And even if he doesn't rescue us from the fire, we still know that he will rescue us from your mighty power. Well, this doesn't sit all that well with the king. Actually, it says, Nebuchadnezzar was so furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that his face became distorted with rage. And he commanded that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual. So he goes and he orders them to be thrown into the fiery furnace. The heat is on. The temperature is raised so high in the furnace, 7 times hotter than normal, that the people, the soldiers who throw them into the fiery furnace are killed as a result of the heat. And his face, this is the thing. He liked Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was so impressed with them that he put them in charge of the entire province of Babylon. He trusted them with everything. He sought wisdom from them. He sought counsel from them. Anything that needed wisdom and good judgment, he went to them about. He liked them. But because they refused to bow down to his statue, his face, he was so enraged that his face became distorted, and he had the heat turned up even more, 7 times hotter, so much so that it killed the soldiers who threw him in. And the fate of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was sealed. Until it wasn't. But suddenly Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement and exclaimed to his advisors, "Didn't we tie up 3 men and throw them into the furnace?" And his advisors looked back at him and said, "Yes, you moron, you know that..." No, they didn't say that. They said, "Yes, your majesty, we certainly did," they replied. "Look," Nebuchadnezzar shouted, "I see 4 men unbound, walking about in the fire unharmed. And the fourth looks like a god." I'm not sure that Nebuchadnezzar knew what he was seeing. The question, I think, is rhetorical, even though his advisors answer it, because I would guess you would always answer the question to the king, or you would be thrown in the fire next. He said, "Didn't we throw..." Yes, he knew they threw 3 men in. He watched them get thrown in. Weren't they bound? Yes, they were bound. You saw us tie them up. You saw that they weren't able. And I think he probably surely didn't expect them to be walking around in the fire unharmed. I think he expected them to be completely incinerated and not recognizable and not even be able to see. But he says, "I see 4 people in there, and they're walking around. They're not tied up. Let me see if I can identify them." Okay, there's Shadrach, there's Meshach, there's Abednego, there's the 3 that we threw in, they're walking around. The 4th one, I don't know. He's about to. But the 4th one, he doesn't know. All I can tell you about the 4th one is he looks like a god. The king had asked, "What god will be able to rescue you from my power when you're thrown in the furnace?" And now he's about to find out. Now he's about to find out. It says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar came as close as he could to the door of the flaming furnace and shouted..." He could only come so close because it was so hot that it had killed the other people. He wasn't taking his chances. He says, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out. Come here." Now, interesting, because earlier he had said, "What god will rescue you? You refuse to serve my gods," which means Nebuchadnezzar had multiple gods that he considered, including himself, who had achieved godlike status through his abilities and all that. But now, what does he call Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Servants of the Most High God. It seems that Nebuchadnezzar is coming to recognize and to realize something about the God that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego serve. The God who they claimed would rescue them, but even if he doesn't, they would still not waver in their trust. It seems that he is recognizing something about them. And then he goes on to say, "So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stepped out of the fire." Can you imagine this moment? Can you imagine this moment in history as Nebuchadnezzar got as close as he could? I mean, their fate was sealed, but he sees them in there, and he calls them to come out, and they come out. They step out of the fire. "Then the high officers, officials, governors, and advisors," who, by the way, were the ones who went and tattletaled on them to the king, "crowded around..." Imagine that. They crowded around and them and saw that the fire had not touched them. Not a hair of their heads was singed, and their clothing was not scorched. They didn't even smell of smoke. So, my God is able to rescue us from your mighty power. If we are thrown in the blazing furnace, our God can rescue us. But even if he doesn't, our trust will not waver. In this instance, God rescues them. And God rescues them from the furnace. God rescues them from Nebuchadnezzar's mighty power. And it seems like something is happening to this ruthlessly brutal king. Something is happening, not just in what he sees, but something appears to be happening in his heart. Because he says, "Therefore, I make this decree. If any people, whatever their race or nation or language..." Which sounds kind of similar to the other one, "People of all races, nations, and languages, bow to the worship when you hear the music." He says, therefore, I make this decree, speak, if any people speak a word against Shadrach, the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they will be torn limb from limb. So earlier it was, if you refuse to bow down to my statue, you'll be thrown into a blazing furnace. Now it's if you even speak a word against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So it seems like maybe the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego has proven something to Nebuchadnezzar because there's a shift going on. You'll be thrown into the fiery furnace earlier, but in this instance, you'll be torn limb from limb. I tell you, I think I'd rather be thrown into a furnace because it would be quick, and torn limb from limb would be a little bit longer and a little more excruciating. So there seems to be a more severe, harsh, same end result, probably, just a more ruthless and brutal way to get there. And their houses will be turned into heaps of rubble. And then listen to this. There is no other God who can rescue like this. There is no other God who can rescue like this. Something has happened. Something has happened in the heart and the mind of this ruthlessly brutal king who set up a statue to have himself worshipped by the people. Who has said, serve my gods or die. Serve me as a god. Worship me as a god or die. And now something has happened, and he says, there is no other God. So cast them all aside, set them all aside, because there is no other God who can rescue like this. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were put in a situation where the heat was on, they simply made a series of decisions that aligned with the convictions of what they believed about their God. As a result, it appears that King Nebuchadnezzar began to believe in the same God. He says, now, I, Nebuchadnezzar, go ahead and go there. Now, I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and glorify and honor the King of Heaven. A ruthlessly brutal king who had sought glory and praise and honor for himself now says he praises, glorifies, and honors. And through whatever had happened, he comes to recognize all his acts are just and true, and he is able to humble the proud. When Nebuchadnezzar makes this statement, he is able to humble the proud, I have to wonder who specifically he's talking about. I have to believe that he's talking about the king who built the statue, the king who expected worship, the king who demanded worship. I have to believe the king who was ruthless and brutal and willing to have people killed for refusing to honor and praise and glorify him. I think that when he says this, I think he recognizes all of the acts of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are just and true, and he is able to humble the proud, even a ruthlessly brutal king who thinks he's his own God. I think that's what's going on. The interesting thing is that right before Nebuchadnezzar says this, he has told the story about the blazing furnace. He has told the story about Daniel and how they stayed true to their convictions, and because how they stayed true to their convictions, how it impacted those around them. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are put in the position, they just make a series of decisions along the way. Eat the king's food or not. That was one of the first decisions they made. Eat the king's food or not. Bow down to the statue or not. Pretend to tie our shoe or not. Give in to the king's distorted rage or not. Trust in God even if he doesn't. Never waver in our trust no matter what the circumstances look like. After this, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are restored into the king's service, and they're elevated to an even higher position than they were before. And things work out really, really well for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. most of the time. They still hit roadblocks along the way. They still meet challenging circumstances. There are times where it seems like things aren't going to work out like they should or like they hope or they think they would in multiple times. There are multiple times where that's what they face. But the common denominator in each and every one of them, whether they're elevated to the highest position or thrown into the fiery furnace, their trust in God does not waver. They simply make a series of decisions along the way. And don't we face similar decisions? Do we face decisions to eat the king's food or not? Do we face decisions to bow down to the statue or not? Do we face the decision in a certain group of people to pretend to tie our shoe so that we give the appearance that we're following that instead of standing firm in our convictions about what we believe and what we know to be right? When the heat is on and we are faced with the reality of circumstances being so intense and so escalated that if we don't do this, we're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace. Do we have the courage to stand firm in our convictions and to say, my God is able to rescue me from whatever it is, but even if he doesn't, I will never bow down and serve your gods or worship your statue? The story is a story of decisions along the way. And isn't that your story? Isn't that my story? And at the core of the story, theirs, yours, mine, ours, is the question, will we place our trust in God who is able, even if he doesn't? Let me pray for you as we wrap up our time. God, thank you for today. Thank you for this time. Thank you for this incredible story about three guys who were on the hot seat. And when the heat was turned up, when the heat was on, their trust in you never wavered. And through their courage, a ruthless, brutal king began to see you as the Most High God. God, help each and every one of us to make courageous decisions about where we will place our trust, if we will place our trust in you or we will place it somewhere else. But help each and every one of us to come to a place of recognizing that you are the God who is able, even when it seems like you don't. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so we'll roll the preview video for next week. The next 2 weeks, we have a guest speaker coming in because my family will be away the next couple of weeks doing something about moving some kid into college somewhere and all that. So you can pray for us around that time. Next week, we take him up and drop him off, and he leaves for a soccer missions trip, and then the next week, he comes back, and we still don't really know what's going to happen that week. We don't know if they move in the dorm. We don't know if they come home. We don't know if they go into temporary housing and all that, but we do know that we need to be available to figure that out. So the next 2 weeks, we have a guest speaker coming in. We'll roll the preview video, and when the preview video, I guess I'm done. When the preview video is over, we're dismissed for the day. Thanks for being here.